Hello, and welcome to Medical Fun Facts, episode 70. What is a pandemic? It's Monday, the 12th of June, 2017. In Canberra, where I live, we're celebrating the official birthday of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Now, I'm not necessarily a monarchist, but I'm happy to take a long weekend. In fact, when Australia becomes a republic, I want to be the first president. I'm going to stand on a platform of one long weekend every month. So if you like that idea, vote for Gary. Anyway, thank you very much for subscribing and listening to Medical Fun Facts. Show notes for every episode are available at the blog, drgarylum.com/blog. So after episode 69, there was a little bit of a bump in my analytics. I saw a few more viewers of the blog, a few more listeners of the podcast, and a few more viewers of the YouTube video. I was going to take a break, but I thought with a long weekend, I'd have time to do another show. And I did receive a question on Twitter. So if you've got a question or if you've got an idea that you'd like to share with me, feel free to tweet me, to write a comment on the Facebook page, to write a comment after every blog post, to write a comment with the YouTube video, or you can send me an email via the blog's contact page. All the contact stuff is in the show notes. So the question that I got via Twitter was about pandemics, and specifically about antigenic shift and antigenic drift in influenza virus A virions. So what is a pandemic? Well, a pandemic can have many definitions, but the usual one is an outbreak of a communicable disease, and not necessarily a chronic disease like heart disease or obesity. And when people talk about pandemics of obesity and pandemics of heart disease, it's not really a true fit. Really, pandemics are about person-to-person spread of an infectious or a communicable disease. So for example, we recently had a pandemic of human immunodeficiency virus infection. And for those that aren't aware, we're currently in the seventh pandemic of cholera, O1. So what I mean by that is the Vibrio cholerae serotype O1, which started in Indonesia, and it still hasn't finished. There's also a significant outbreak of Vibrio cholerae O139 that started in Bangladesh. That hasn't necessarily reached pandemic status, but it might do. When we talk about pandemics, most people think about influenza and influenza virus infection. So in our recent history, and if we start in the early 1900s, we've had a influenza virus A, H1N1 pandemic, which was known as the Spanish influenza in 1918. In 1957, there was an Asian influenza pandemic, which was caused by a widespread infection with influenza virus A, H2N2. And then shortly after that, in 1968, there was the Hong Kong influenza pandemic, which was caused by influenza virus A, H3N2. In 2009, we had another influenza virus A, H1N1 pandemic, which started in Mexico, moved north into the United States of America and in Canada. We experienced it in Oceania, with first cases being reported in New Zealand. Although, in hindsight and looking back at cases, the epidemiology suggests that we saw cases in Victoria in Australia well before those cases were identified and characterised in New Zealand. So a pandemic can be an outbreak in a whole country that affects a whole country or the globe. So effectively, it all depends on how well known and what news is made of such an outbreak. For example, if there was an infectious disease that affected the entire United States of America, I'm pretty sure everybody would hear about it. Americans might call it a pandemic, but I don't think it is. And I think it's better if we use the term pandemic to reflect a global outbreak of a communicable disease. So for example, when you've got infections that are occurring in probably three or more continents. Certainly, with the recent pandemic of influenza virus in 2009, there were infections across the entire Earth, and I think that that was a true pandemic. So what's the difference between seasonal influenza and pandemic influenza? Now, each season, small genetic changes occur in the main circulating influenza viruses. When this happens, there is sufficient antigenic difference that our immunological memory doesn't provide full protection, but it might provide some cross-protection. The changes in the antigens are usually only small, hence they drift a bit, or antigenic drift. So when I think about antigenic drift, the easy way to remember it is small drifting changes, as opposed to antigenic shift, which is a major change. The changes accumulate, so then the difference is big enough. A person who may well have been infected previously won't necessarily have sufficient protection, and they'll get infected again and develop influenza, the disease. It's why the immunisation preparation changes each year to reflect subtle changes in the virus. Antigenic shift reflects a significant change in the influenza virus A virion. This could mean a whole new hemagglutinin and or a new hemagglutinin and neuraminidase protein complex. The hemagglutinin is the H in the virus designation, and the neuraminidase is the N component. When there are changes in these components, the resulting virus is so different that immunity in humans probably doesn't exist, even though the pandemics in 1918 and 2009 were both H1N1 viruses. They are very different viruses antigenically. Antigenic drift and antigenic shift occurs in influenza virus A virions, and antigenic drift occurs only in influenza virus B virions. I hear you ask, what is important about the B virus, and why does the seasonal immunisation preparation contain antigens to two A viruses and two B viruses? The influenza virus B causes more severe infection in children, and that's why it's included. One more thing. You often hear people talk about how they're sick with the flu, when more often than not, the upper respiratory tract infection that they have, which gives rise to a headache, sore throat, and nasal congestion, are usually caused by viruses like rhinoviruses, coronaviruses, enteroviruses, and a few others. This common cold illness is very different to true influenza, which is usually an incapacitating illness with fever, cough, muscle and joint pain, along with severe headache, malaise, and lethargy. After influenza, true depression can occur, and secondary bacterial infection with golden staph can also occur. In some people with this secondary bacterial infection, it can lead to cavitating pneumonia, which occasionally can be deadly. Apart from pandemic strains, every year people at the extremes of age, the frail and infirm, succumb to influenza. It's a good reason for people in those categories to be immunised. So if you're in a risk group for influenza, you should consider annual immunisation. Likewise, people who live close to you should also consider immunisation. I find it remarkable to think that there are people out there who believe immunisation is harmful, and a plot by government and pharmaceutical companies to financially rip off and physically harm humans. The benefits of immunisation are plain to see for anyone who is prepared to weigh up the evidence that is before us. And so ends another episode of Medical Fun Facts. You can find the show notes for every episode at the blog, drgarylum.com/blog. You can also find updates at the Facebook page. Medical Fun Facts is available in the iTunes podcast store and also on Stitcher. If you visit the websites for both, you'll be able to provide a rating and a review. By giving Medical Fun Facts a rating, particularly in iTunes, a 5-star rating, it makes it easier for the algorithms to work so that more people can be aware of the podcast. Also, if you visit iTunes and leave a comment, particularly if you subscribe and if you give a thumbs up, it'll also help the iTunes algorithms as well, make Medical Fun Facts more available to people. Now, if you disagree with anything in these podcasts, or if you'd like to voice a different view, please feel free to leave a comment. If I've said something incorrect, I welcome correction. Please also feel free to share your comments on social media. Thank you and good night.